Hi, I'm Emily Rawlings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. Welcome to Forget Dis, taking the dis out of disabilities.
We are music therapists from Dynamic Music Therapy in Las Vegas, Nevada. This podcast highlights people who live with unique challenges that they have transformed. We will meet people from different walks of life, discuss how music therapy can help in specific ways, and present how to and how not to talk to people with disabilities.
One story of almost unimaginable strife and pain and transcendent hope and resiliency. This is the story of Jacob Smith, a young musician living with trigeminal neuralgia. Trigeminal neuralgia. It's a bit of a mouthful linguistically and literally. This is a chronic pain condition affecting the trigeminal nerve, which innervates the face. The resulting pain from this nerve acting out can be excruciating, and since it's rare, not much is known about it, resulting in little awareness and limited treatment options. Enough from me, as I think Jake can explain it much better and provide us with his personal experiences and how he uses music to transform these experiences and raise awareness for others like him. So Jake, it's very nice to meet you officially over the computer, so you can only shake hands this way.
Yeah, you too.
All right, so how are you doing today, Jake?
I'm doing okay. It's not too bad of a day.
Not too bad of a day. No. Can't complain.
Yeah.
So this is, sitting here with me is Emily. She's also another music therapist.
Hi, how you doing?
Nice to meet you.
So welcome to Forget Dis. It's very good to have you on our show. We're really excited. I was happy to connect with you through Facebook, through the support group. So could you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name's Jake. I live in Colorado Springs, have for my whole life. I'm 19, and for the past 4 years now, I've just been in nonstop pain, I guess, you know, severe headaches, and started with a bunch of concussions and then car accidents and stuff, and went down the road of concussion protocol. After 2 years, found out I had CSF leaks, which is cerebrospinal fluid leaks, little tears in the dura of your skull that was actually leaking spinal fluid, which was perpetuating the headaches. So I got those patched, and it blew open again. So after more and more, you know, appointments and studies and stuff, they found out that I actually have trigeminal neuralgia, which might have come from one of the concussions, where it's kind of complicated because I have this multitude of things that have kind of come into play. One of them is called the Chiari malformation, where basically there's not enough room in the back of your skull, and cerebellar tonsils are sagging a little bit, and it's pinching off the flow of the cerebrospinal fluid, and it can be causing the trigeminal neuralgia and all the headaches and a bunch of other symptoms and stuff. But so still on the road to figuring everything out, but in the meantime, I guess, you know, I've been out of school. I've been trying to do school, but have kind of been set back 2 years and keep having to drop classes every semester. So I'm taking a few college classes right now, and then technically still in high school, and then we'll see how long that lasts. But, you know, mainly what I do right now is just lots and lots of music. I compose music and play piano, guitar, drums, and I mean, because I'm home pretty much all the time. I had to go back 2 years in school because I just missed so much. Can't drive just because the headaches are so bad all the time, and can't focus any of that stuff. But I've been able to do music through the whole thing, and that's really been, I guess, the main thing.
Yeah, so would
Is music one of your passions?
Oh, it's biggest passion.
The biggest one, yeah.
Yeah.
When did
definitely.
When did you start playing?
I started playing piano when I was 5. Took lessons since then, and kind of stopped taking lessons when all the head stuff started, and just kind of did my own thing. And then, yeah, I played guitar for 4 years now, and I did percussion with the school band since seventh grade.
Emily over here is also has that background. Wow, awesome. So I listened to some of your music, and it's lovely, by the way. Thank you for sharing. You also have a new album out.
Thanks.
Can you talk a little bit about the new album and kind of how you created it, basically, what your process was?
So my album's called Loretto, and basically it's solo piano, and it's this journey basically from start to finish. You know, it's not necessarily a compilation of different songs as much as it is each separate song is like a chapter, and then they all flow into each other, and it has the different melodies throughout it, and then at the end it kind of brings them all back together and incorporates it into the finale, and then it's kind of circular. So if you leave it on repeat and leaving it in the same order, it should just kind of flow through itself continuously. But it's the original Loretto was a symphony. The first thing I ever wrote was a symphony called Loretto in my second freshman year of high school. Was my band director showed me this band or this composition competition that was hosted by CU Boulder. And it was a young composers competition where you just compose an original piece and submit it, basically. So I started working on this symphony because, you know, why not, and worked on it for a couple months, and a week before the competition I was having a really, really nasty flare up. Like, my head was really bad. And this was a time when it was like I was going to the ER for pain management. Mm-hmm. More than I should have been. And I just remember like being in the basement and just completely distraught, like, and kind of I had the adrenaline rush going, tunnel vision, because my head was just pounding so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And like almost panic setting in, you know, and I just was like, I don't know, completely panicked. And I started praying, and I was like, God, you know, I've been praying a long time for this to go away, and if it's not gonna go away, will you just help me use it for something good, so I'm not just sitting here just getting tortured for nothing. They helped me use it. And I immediately like had this idea to just scratch the whole thing I've been working on for a couple months and completely redid it from scratch. And it ended up getting first place in the competition.
Wow.
Which was pretty awesome. But
that's amazing.
Ever since then, I've just been able to compose like pretty much live. Like a lot of the stuff I record, a lot of my recordings are just I go sit at the piano, hit record, play it, and it's done. And then I'll number it or name it whatever the date is, because I just have a whole stockpile of them now. But and then, you know, when I really like a couple of the melodies, I'll go back to a couple of the ones that I've done and then pick apart my favorite parts of them.
Yeah.
And then put them together into one song, you know, get a good compilation of the, like, the three really different good of a song, as opposed to just having some, you know, cause nice background music sounds nice and all, but I definitely want to try to go more for like a little earworm in the beginning that kind of gets stuck in your head or catches your attention and has a theme that rises and falls throughout the song.
Oh yeah, definitely love to have a good theme.
I think that's probably the coolest prayer I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have that kind of insight into yourself, and I can't imagine going through that kind of pain.
Well, and what a great catalyst moment it sounds like, mm-hmm. To kind of turn this pain into something else. Sounds definitely like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of like opening blinds, you know, to a window where I'm stuck in this dark box that's where I'm trapped, you know, and then all of a sudden open the blinds on the window and you see outside the window is the complete opposite, you know. I don't know. I think of waterfalls, oceans, just nature scenes and different indescribable, whatever the polar opposite of the pain that I was in was on the outside of the box and I was on the inside. And when I, that prayer moment, when everything just kind of flipped, it was the blinds opening and I'm like, that's the opposite. Because I feel this bad right now, mm-hmm. this is what I imagine the complete opposite to be. And I'm going to play that. I'm going to show what I think that is through the piano. And it was kind of that like perspective flip. That's kind of let me do the music so much, I guess.
I absolutely cannot wait to listen to the music now.
Yeah, you got to hear it. It's good. I've listened to some of it definitely. And it's beautiful, beautiful stuff. And I'm glad that, you can take that and just transform it totally into something that you can imagine mm-hmm. What you want your future to be, basically. What is, mm-hmm. I'm curious, what's one thing that you wish people understood about trigeminal neuralgia?
The pain isn't comparable to normal pain, I guess. Like, I would say, you know, you go to a doctor's office and they tell you the pain scale, rate your pain on a scale of 1 to 10, mm-hmm. you know, and you go, well, every little kid goes in there and he says, this is the worst pain I've ever been in. So it's a 10, you know?
Yeah.
So before all this head stuff happened, you know, I think I maybe went into the ER for a concussion, like, I don't know, maybe a couple of years earlier. And I remember getting that question and saying, it's a 12. And it was just a pretty achy headache. It wasn't nearly anything that was to come. But going forward, you know, I broke a little piece off the ball of my foot one time and went for 6 months before I actually ended up getting it x-rayed and went through a whole marching band season on it just because it was so minimal compared to everything else going on with my head that I didn't really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Like the pain in trigeminal neuralgia completely resets the whole pain scale to where your previous 10 is now your 2. Like,
wow.
Your constant is what used to, is what to normal people would be curling up in a ball. And it's, you never completely get used to it. You know, but your pain tolerance goes up a lot, but every time, you know, you can be, there's two different types. There's type 1 and type 2. Type 1, you're pretty much fine all the time until, well, not all the time, but you're fine until it hits. And then it's brutal. It literally feels like getting zapped in the face with a lightning bolt or getting stabbed repeatedly with an ice pick. You know, somebody hooks up pliers to your teeth, they're ripping them out, car battery. And it doesn't hit and then fade. It only gets worse as it's going. And you don't know whether or not it's going to last 12 seconds or whether it's going to last 2 hours. And if it's going to happen once a day or if it's going to happen 8 times a day. And it's not just the pain aspect of it, but the psychological aspect of you're always waiting for it. It's like you're waiting for this. It's this invisible guy that's always following you around. And you know, at some point he's going to jump out and stab you in the face and there's nothing you can do about it. And you just have to, grit your teeth and get through it and take your meds.
Yeah. So there's no predictability of when one of these flare-ups strike, right?
So there are lots and lots of triggers that like I can't wear over the ear headphones or wear glasses at all anymore, which I used to be able to. I can't anymore. Mm-hmm. But stuff like touching anywhere around right above the ear and then anywhere on the face, really, depending. There's sensitive spots specifically for me that sometimes are worse than other, but you know, it can be kind of crazy. Like you walk outside and a gust of wind on your face feels like a blowtorch, and then all of a sudden you have to run back inside and do whatever meds you can because it starts the shocks up. And so there's the touching aspect of it, but then there's the daily life aspects where you can't brush your teeth at night because touching your tooth is going to make you feel like, you know, your cheeks getting ripped out. And taking a shower, getting the water on your face at the wrong spot kind of ruins the relaxing aspect of the shower, to say in the least. Noises sometimes, you know, I'm lucky that I'm not one of the people that has like any noise trigger their trigeminal neuralgia because I'm so into music.
Yeah, but, there goes that.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
The high pitched noises will still get me though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, if it's really heavy bass enough to make something vibrate, that'll sometimes set it off for me. And I actually have atypical trigeminal neuralgia, which isn't the normal type, but I still have symptoms of TN1. I don't think that, you know, my attacks are nearly as bad as a lot of people with TN1. The difference is atypical also has a constant aspect where you're just constantly have a headache, and it can also be on both sides. And type 1 is usually caused by a blood vessel constricting the nerve, which wears away the myelin, which is the coating around the nerve, over time. And then once that's worn away, the nerve basically misfires, and it just goes haywire and gives out all the wrong signals, misinterprets everything. Or like every time your heart beats, you know, you get a pulse, and that little pulse feels like a shock as it hits the nerve. So that's type 1, and they can do a surgery for that where they basically cut through the skull and go in and pull the blood vessel away and then put a Teflon tissue in between it. And then that has a pretty high success rate, and I think lasts for average of like 20 years or something, if not for good. But there, the other types of surgery are a gamma knife, where it basically just cuts the nerve. Another one where they inject, is it glycerol? I'm not sure. Something into the nerve to kill it, basically. Wow. But those two, and a radio frequency ablation where they stick a metal rod in and then fry it using radio frequency.
Sounds like
and all three of those
surgeries to me.
Yeah, these are crazy.
Yeah. I felt exactly like Frankenstein a few years ago. I had nerve ablations on my neck because they thought the issue was whiplash. And I was laying down on the table and they stick the prongs in my neck and they hook you up, you know, the electricity thing, but that's what it felt like. And
wow. Ooh.
It was a fun experience. I mean, I was heavily medicated, but it was just
that's one way to think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, a fun experience. Man. Wow. My hope is too that, yeah, so it sounds like there are some, they're trying things. There's constantly this push to find
new methods, new, hopefully cure. As far as I know, there is no cure except for that. You say that one surgery has somewhat high of a success rate, but.
Yeah. But again, that's like, you know, that's a mechanical go in and put something in between it as opposed to very invasive. Yeah. The Facial Pain Association is raising money and awareness for trigeminal neuralgia, and they're great, great association to reach out to if you have trigeminal neuralgia, because they're tons of information and they have conferences and support groups and tons of stuff. But the research for trigeminal neuralgia is just, you know, there's not a ton of it, and not many people know what it is. You say trigeminal neuralgia and they go, what?
Yeah,
not many people know what it is. Yeah.
No, because that's kind of how. So my mom actually has TN1, I believe. And so that's kind of why. That's why I connected through the support group. Noticed that you were a musician. So she, kind of explains a lot of the same symptoms, has had the same experience. She's was diagnosed not long ago, though, so she hasn't been on as long of a journey. But, it just seems kind of like this trial and error, knowing what the triggers are. And then, we look at to see if, you know, what research is out there, what is being done, and not a whole lot yet. So, our hope is for that to change, too, and hopefully, like, we are able to learn more about this. And educate the public too. I feel like there is this huge misunderstanding about chronic pain. Like you said, you mentioned trigeminal neuralgia to anybody, and they're like, "Wait, oh, what?"
I
didn't know what it was.
Yeah. So, and that's what we like to do here with this podcast, is kind of just educate listeners. You know, the more people that hear about it, the better. And just knowing and kind of building empathy. Too. It's maybe you've never had anything like this happen to you, but you can still listen and understand maybe why. And we think too, music is such a great communicator for that too. It kind of breaks the barrier between people, because if we can listen to the music that you make or anyone makes and kind of understand their perspective that way too. So it's really great that, you are able to compose. And you're passionate about music and writing music.
Do you know how many people have this condition?
I am not sure on the numbers. I think I saw something like 200,000. US, but I have no idea though. Just a sec.
Yeah. From what I've read or heard, it's pretty rare. But maybe that's, we never know. Again, with chronic pain, because it's not reported or misdiagnosed a lot of the time, I feel like.
The estimates are 66,000 to 280,000 people in the U.S. Yeah. And, you know, that's just the U.S. So the rest of the world, too, you know. I don't even know what the care is like in the rest of the world for trigeminal neuralgia, but.
Yeah. Or how much awareness is out there, or.
I mean, I cannot imagine having this like in Africa or like, or if anybody in like a really poor country that.
Didn't have the same
doesn't
kind of
have
like,
access
resources.
To healthcare. Yeah.
You know, not necessarily all of Africa, but just like the really poor.
Yeah.
Villages and stuff like where you don't have access to healthcare or a place where you don't have access to good healthcare, you know, that you have to waiting 6 months for an appointment to somebody with trigeminal neuralgia is a little different, you know, when they're waiting for someone to stop the invisible guy from knifing them. You know, they're not waiting for a checkup or anything. And I've been really lucky that, you know, I've been able to get the healthcare, you know, in the US that I've needed and had my choice of everything and been able to go to different doctors and stuff. And I've been to way too many doctors, but I'm glad I've been able to go to that many doctors. Like, I can't imagine being in a really poor country and having this
having
and just
nothing. Yeah, no availability. So
yeah,
luckily there is some understanding of this kind of like base level. 6 months. Is that usually how long you wait to have an appointment?
For like... me, no. My in other countries, I know for there's huge wait lists for the appointments, and then you know you can pay $900 if you want to get in now out of pocket for a checkup, but
yeah.
I don't know. This is one of these conditions that you're constantly calling the doctor in between appointments for advice and for different meds and stuff. And if the doctors aren't as available and are more backed up, then or there's not, you don't have a good doctor that knows about it, because a lot of doctors don't even know much about trigeminal neuralgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's already incredibly hard to treat. Well, I guess, yeah, in a lot of cases, and manage, but making that harder, I guess, with not being able to necessarily get into specialists quickly. Like, that's been one of the biggest things that has made this tough, is just always waiting and waiting and waiting between different appointments, because I end up making an appointment that's like 2 months out, because I basically only see specialists now. You know, all the primary care docs said you're too complicated, so I won't see you, basically. And then a lot of doctors have, you know, said, sorry, too complicated, wish I could help. One doctor said, wow, you know, if you had a brain tumor, I'd know what to do with you, but
you don't, so.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, that sounds familiar. With my mom, she gets shuffled around quite a bit by primaries and even specialists. I find that specialists sometimes even have a hard time understanding what's going on or what to do. It does seem like their hands are tied, because, like you said, there's little to no research, so it's like their knowledge base is really limited too. So, no.
And you know, one of my docs said, put it really well. He said, all these specialists are so used to looking at horses that they're looking for horses and they don't know what to do when they see a zebra. And that's what they try to fit it into the box of the horse.
Yeah, and then
and that just
going from the wrong doesn't scope. Work. Yeah. Do you find too that like specialists are very, obviously a specialist, they focus on one thing. Also, it seems to be that there's little to no communication between specialists and between the primary. Is that your experience as well?
When I had the primary doc, I think they faxed over all the records and stuff, but there wasn't really too much. I mean, my primary doc didn't really know too much about. Like, he was pretty much there to refer me until we ended up just dropping got dropped by the primary care doctor. But the main doctor that's been coordinating everything for me is actually the ENT that fixed my cerebrospinal fluid leaks. And he coordinated for a really long time and did a great job and was great about communicating. And he's still actually, you know, part of the team working on fixing me now, because I actually have more CSF leaks currently that they don't want to patch yet until they can figure out if they're going to stay shut. But he's been, Dr. Edward Hepworth, he's just been a great, great doctor. He's been, like, he sent me to, I guess, all the right people to figure stuff out, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
You're all good.
Sick. Yeah, he talks to a bunch of different doctors, I guess, to try to get all their different opinions and figure out, you know, look at it from a bunch of different angles. Hmm. And so coming into the picture, besides just the CSF leak sending me to all these different doctors, it's looking like I have a connective tissue disorder, like Ehlers-Danlos. And
that's also what my mom has as well. So I'm noticing a really high comorbidity with Ehlers-Danlos and other connective tissue mm-hmm. disorders like Marfan's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marfan's is the other one that they were looking at. But yeah. And the Chiari malformation right now is what it looks like, which we thought was ruled out 2 years ago, but was just brought back up by a chiropractor. I'm seeing Dr. Randy James actually looked at it, and he said he started describing Chiari to me and my mom while we were at the appointment, and we were like, well, we already know what this is, you know, we went over this, but it was ruled out. And he's like, but I'm looking at it, and he shows it on the MRI that he can actually see the brain sagging. So I just did an upright MRI yesterday, which was pretty brutal, because they strap your face into a cage and then a bunch of loud noises lasts about 45 minutes. It was actually a redo because I failed last week's, but I was pretty doped up for that, so it turned out okay. But anyway, now I'm just waiting, I guess, for that MRI to get sent off to a doctor in New York, Dr. Paolo Bolognese. Hopefully can see him and see what he thinks. But looking at the MRI, I'm blanking on the term again, but there's the angle basically of your spinal cord that's measured, and the measure of mine is low enough to be considered, you know, inhibiting on functions and stuff. So, and Chiari also explains just about every one of the symptoms I've been having. You know, trigeminal neuralgia is, for me, will hopefully go away if the Chiari goes away. And I really hope it goes away.
Yeah, we hope so too.
But like brain fog, and it's weirder things that I hadn't noticed until I started reading on these list of symptoms that I've never, you know, talked to doctors about it, because I think they're completely, totally irrelevant to my face hurting. But like weird, different being able to swallow and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm way colder. I'm either way too cold or way too hot. It's like there's no in between. I'll either sleep on top of my blankets and gym shorts when it's snowing outside, or I can be under every comforter I have in the summer and still be shivering. And that's kind of been getting worse actually over the past couple months, but apparently that's also a symptom of Chiari. And I guess a lot of people, Chiari is really underdiagnosed. Also, it's another really, really unpublicized, low awareness disease. And I think most, if not all, people with Chiari have EDS, I think.
Yeah, wow.
But it causes a ton of problems, and a lot of people don't actually figure out they have it until they get a head injury like I did. When you know your brain's sagging, you get hit in the head, everything's already bent, and it does more damage than it should, and you just don't get better. And that's how a lot of people, I guess, how it comes up for them, but they don't get it treated or fixed because either the doctors don't know about it, and a lot of doctors don't know about it, or they say the brain seg is under 5 millimeters, which is the surgical line for if they can operate on it, which apparently is just a bogus number they came up with. It means nothing, and you can and doesn't actually have a correlation to symptoms. And there's actually something called Chiari zero that's debated upon between medical professionals, but it's where you don't have brain sag but still have the symptoms. And a friend of mine actually had Chiari zero, and the surgery by Dr. Bolognese really, really helped her. And that's and Chiari, I guess, it's one of those weird ones where it just it has a bunch of weird symptoms that it's not necessarily a list of symptoms that, you know, checks whichever ones you have off of this list. It's like, here are the main ones that most people with Chiari have, and then all that other weird stuff going on with you that you can't explain is probably also Chiari, like just a bunch of random stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of the headaches, like I have the trigeminal neuralgia, but I also get like the stabbing in the back where the occipital nerve is, and then like sometimes in my ear, which would be glossopharyngeal neuralgia, but that one's doesn't really, it's not as often, I guess. Mm-hmm. The trigeminal neuralgia is the really, really the main one that's just pretty killer.
Sounds really complicated, actually.
Yeah.
Lots of different things.
Yeah, it's pretty. Done lots and lots of research.
So what, when this, you know, you have all of this stuff coming up and these constant appointments, and how does it affect your social life?
Social life is definitely taking a hit. Like, I mean, not being able to drive at this point, not really going to school much. You know, I haven't graduated yet, and all my friends did last year, so I should have last year. So they're, you know, off at college, and then I have a few really, really good close friends that are just great, and I still hang out with a lot. And, you know, they'll come over to my house and stuff. We'll play poker or music or watch movies or whatever, but, like, I don't go out as much and do stuff with people, especially because I can't drive right now, just because it's too dangerous to drive when.
Yeah.
Chink.
Right.
It's just imagine, not.
Yeah.
Yep. And then that just not wanting to take the risk on being on all meds and not knowing whether or not that can affect my reflexes, mm-hmm. whatnot. And then just not being as into everything, I guess, all the activities, you know, you're always in pain, and that always makes everything hard, like really hard.
It really sounds like it.
Yeah.
Nah.
So you mentioned you're taking some college classes. What are your future plans?
Well, I mean, my dream job would be to score movies or TV shows, I think, you know, do music for those. I think something would be cool would be like traveling around and doing like piano concerts and raising awareness for stuff. You know, like I'm still working on how I can set up a donation website where I can not sell my CDs, but like where you buy a CD and then the money goes to the Facial Pain Association. So it could be like a, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily want to hear about chronic pain conditions. It's depressing to listen to somebody talk about brutally being tortured all the time. But my idea also with my music stuff was to use that to kind of catch people's attention and then say, oh, now I got your attention. Learn about trigeminal neuralgia, raise awareness for it, and donate to the Facial Pain Association. And kind of, I don't know, I kind of want to see if I can incorporate those two in, because then I could be using trigeminal neuralgia to fight trigeminal neuralgia, and that'd be beating it, you know, that'd be winning.
Yeah,
we definitely want to win.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll also provide links to the Facial Pain Association too at the end of the podcast. Okay. So people know we can route people in that direction as well.
Yeah. Can we play one of your songs?
Yeah, sure. Cool. I could actually play one for you live.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Let's hear it.
That's seriously awesome.
There's not something in my eye. I swear. Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for playing live for us.
Guess what album I'm going to go buy next.
Yeah, guess what? We're going to go download after this interview.
Can you find your album on iTunes?
Yeah, it's on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, pretty much everything. It's called Loretto, Loretto by Jacob J. Smith. And yeah.
Nice. Thank you for playing that. That was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. That was great. Cool to watch, too. Thank you. I know our listeners obviously can't see you play, but I wish they could. It was really, really cool watching your fingers dance across the piano.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah, what was that piece called, or that song?
That was just kind of a couple little tunes I've been working on that I just kind of, it's one of them's called Water, which is the intro you heard, the main kind of, the thing that started it and ended it is water. And then it's off my next album, Solar Sonata, that I'm working on right now. And so it's a couple of themes from that album that I'm going to be putting together into another story.
We're excited to hear it. Yeah,
definitely.
All right. Well,
thanks so much for talking with us today. I definitely learned a lot about this condition that I still can't say right.
Trigeminal neuralgia.
Trigeminal neuralgia.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. If there was just one thing, like one main thing that you wanted the listeners to take away, what would you want them to hear most?
I guess that, you know, trigeminal neuralgia is an invisible disease on the outside. It's, you know, I look pretty normal right now, and, you know, for the most part. I'm on a ridiculous amount of medication to look this normal. And trigeminal neuralgia is not the only invisible condition out there. You know, there's tons of rare chronic pain conditions and normal chronic pain conditions that people have that you can't see. But a lot of people think people with trigeminal neuralgia are crazy, or, you know, it's all in your head kind of pain. Can't see it, then it's an imagined kind of pain, so it's a psychological problem. Or you'll be out in public talking normally, then right in the middle of a sentence, like, just tense up, yell out, you know, and then it looks like you're possessed by a demon all of a sudden sometimes, and people kind of freak out. I guess the thing would be to people that to understand that there are people that have to deal with chronic pain conditions that look completely normal, and it doesn't just change them, I guess, pain-wise. People with chronic pain end up feeling worse and more depressed and isolated because of how people look at them a lot of times, I guess, like, you know, with pity. A lot of people with chronic pain don't want to just be pitied and looked at like, you know, you're just this helpless, tormented soul. You know, you're still you, and the disease does not define you, but it's, I guess to take away would be that people with chronic pain, it is in invisible diseases. It is very real. It is, and especially with trigeminal neuralgia, it's uncomparable to other kinds of pain. Like if you say, I have this, and you're describing it, and they say, oh, but you know what's really painful? This one time, so-and-so. You're like, yeah, okay. Thanks for the advice. And so that it's not comparable. It's farther than above what you think is worse than you thought possible. It just keeps changing your definition of that. And I guess we want to be treated normally, you know, not just pitied. You know, people don't necessarily talk to us as much sometimes too, because they feel like, you know, they're in pain. I don't want to bother them when you're pretty isolated. Mm-hmm. Chronic pain. I guess that people with chronic pain, a lot of times just want to be treated normally too, I guess, you know, not have them be what people see, not the disease be what people see.
Well, for what it's worth, what I see is an awesome musician.
Mm-hmm.
That whose music is going to become a staple in my household, with incredible determination, and I see that just in the last half hour that we've been talking with you.
Thanks.
definitely. I agree. You have this incredible insight and ability to, I think, just have hope. And yeah, just it's wonderful to have like to have learned so much from you and right. to have talked. I learned.
If all of us said in prayer, what can we do to take this bad card that we've been dealt and turn it into a good card, mm-hmm. the world would be a better place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, what it turns into is people feel depressed and helpless. They feel like my life is never going to get better, you know, mm-hmm. and I honestly, I really, really hope the Chiari surgery, if I get that it fixes the trigeminal neuralgia. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't, then I'm going to use it for the rest of my life. You know, one way or another, if my life sucks, I know that there's always, always potential and hope that I can make somebody else's life better. So regardless of how bad mine is, there's always some kind of hope that you can't see yet that something could happen.
Mm, yeah, we agree. All right, Jake. So it's been really great learning from you, talking with you, and hearing your music live. What a treat.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us for Forget Dis. We hope you have a great rest of your day.
And thanks for having me on. It's good talking to you.
Thank you.
Alrighty. See
ya.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find Jake's music at jakespianomusic.com and his new album, Loretto, on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Again, Loretto is Loretto. We urge you to check out the Facial Pain Association as well at fpa-support.org. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Forget Dis. We'll catch you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.